Well, now to Argentina, where the events of 40 years ago are still very painful, of that military dictatorship from 1976 through to 83. It became known as the Dirty War. But as we'll discover, the nature of memory itself has become very politicised. It's a culture war with real teeth. During those terrible times, 30,000 people, quotes, disappeared, as well as 500 children born to supposed dissidents who were given to couples who supported the dictatorship. Their mothers were killed. On Saturday Extra last year, we cover the 2011 trials and convictions of some of those involved in these vile human rights abuses. And a fresh set of trials this year has seen even more. At the front line of these past 40 years have been the well-documented grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo. They've played a central role, demanding justice via the return of their grandchildren. Not all reunions have been joyful, but there have definitely been some successes which have hit the headlines. The Australian journalist and author Carolyn Brothers has written a novel about this period, concentrating on one family who experienced the terrible loss of a child and their journey to be reunited, and it depicts really the wider picture of a country as it faced terror on a daily basis. We were curious about how Carolyn went about this research, the people she spoke to, how a country comes to terms with such emotionals on such a scale. Carolyn's been a foreign correspondent in Latin America and Europe. Welcome now to Saturday Extra, Carolyn.
Hello, Geraldine.
Those trials I spoke about, Carolyn, are continuing, and I suppose there's an even greater hope for justice now that the Obama administration has released previously classified documents about this period of time. How would you assess it?
Well, Argentina is very interesting, and it's one of the few countries that's been able to hold human rights trials on its own territory in special courts. I think many others, South Africa's tried a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, and other countries had trials in The Hague. But Argentina's been quite in the forefront of this. But it's a very difficult process. I think it's still very raw and very divisive for the community. I think there's still people that feel that some of the things that happened were justified, and that there had been, you know, waves of terrorism beforehand, and that the coup had been a good idea to try and bring stability to the country. And there's still a lot of unquiet about that.
Well, as I read, very interesting. I wasn't aware the degree to which has provoked sort of open discussion, as I said, almost like a form of culture war. And we might come back to that. But these newly declassified documents that the Obama administration has released, what do they say?
They're looking into the responsibilities and how much the United States knew at the time. And there's been a lot of discussion about Kissinger, who was, he seemed to have given kind of not just tacit, but probably more deep kind of complicity with the regime. And so I think some of these, the Argentines have for a long time wanted to know how much the Americans knew about the rights abuses. And, you know, there were parts of the Carter administration that were trying very hard to put a stop to it. Mm. But there has been for a long time a feeling that the US was very complicit and was even involved in training some of the torturers and in methods that were employed right across Latin America.
Yes.
So, we've only just had the first lot of those documents. I think there's more expected to come out in installments. I think there's 5 installments expected.
And again, just for further context, from what I read, what appears to be emerging is that the military actually did defeat fairly fast some armed insurrection from young activists in the very early part of of the junta's time, and then decided to eliminate any dissidents of any sort. So this is the whole point, isn't it, that's sort of transfixing Argentina at the moment. How much became almost like Duterte's going through at the moment, we're going to go do a sort of carte blanche across anybody who disagrees with us, versus really taking on some sort of people who might be called terrorists?
Yes, it kind of expanded, or perhaps it was a project from the very beginning, because the word went out. There were memos sent to the 3 military divisions that subversion should be stamped out, and it was given a very wide interpretation. So anyone who was supportive of democratic rights, or anyone who was any kind of activist or had a social conscience, was kind of was swept up in this. And what would they do? They would take somebody's notebook if they'd been arrested and go through the list of names and then go after all those people and then find out who they knew under torture and go after them. So it was this sort of pyramid of spread of state terrorism, if you like.
Okay, let's get back to the story that particularly sparked your interest. I gather it was about an Argentinian poet who was searching for his granddaughter. What was it that drew you to the story?
Yes, I first saw a small article in a French newspaper about Juan Gelman, the poet who was living in Mexico City. He'd been in exile for many years. And I'd been a correspondent in Mexico, and I wanted to, having read that article, I thought, I must meet this man. And so he very kindly agreed to an interview, and I went back to Mexico City. And it turned out he was living in the apartment almost back to back with where I'd been living. It was very surreal. But and then he told me of his search, not only for his granddaughter who'd been missing, but for his own son. And it was a terribly wrenching and heartbreaking story. And he'd had this, he was so steadfast in his sort of search for her. It had taken him 23 years, and he'd actually located his missing granddaughter. She'd been born in Uruguay. They had no idea. The daughter had been taken there under the Condor Plan. They'd taken her over to Uruguay. She'd given birth, and the child had been adopted by a police family close to the regime. And when I met him, they'd only just met, and they'd handled it very, very sensitively, and she was still coming to terms with her identity. So he wouldn't tell me very much about her. He wanted to keep her identity private. And in fact, he'd asked the Uruguayan press also to keep it quiet so that she could just come to terms with that great psychic shock of finding out that she wasn't who she'd been brought up to believe.
And
she
his
was.
Own son, Marcello, had been abducted as a journalist at the age of 20, and he and Maria Claudia, the 19-year-old who was pregnant, were taken to a workshop in Buenos Aires, which had been converted into a torture centre, and neither returned.
Correct.
Now, you've since met this granddaughter. How would you say she dealt with her story?
Look, she's very reserved, and you can sense sometimes when people have had to face very difficult things, there's sort of almost like a peacefulness about them or an awareness of greater things at work. I don't know, that's maybe speculating a little bit.
Yeah, I understand what you mean.
You know, these children who are now young adults have grown up in one path, and suddenly they have to absorb an entire new heritage, life history. You know, Juan Gelman had, although I don't think he was practicing, was Jewish, and he'd come. His father had escaped the Russian Revolution. And, you know, she had this whole other heritage, Ukrainian background, to come to terms with, and I said, so that's very destabilizing. She went to Argentina and spent some time, I think, getting to know the other children who'd been recovered. And now she's a young MP in Montevideo. So she's just been elected as a Democratic MP. So
my goodness.
Incredible journey, you know. And there's a couple of them that are MPs in Argentina as well. I think they're almost symbols of something, you know, that went wrong in Argentina's past. And it's sort of like a sense of them trying to take a democratic way forward.
And how many have been found out of the 500 children supposedly born?
Yes, there's 120. The 120th was found just a few months ago. The grandmothers made an announcement, and they have a bit of a press conference when people are ready. And first they announce that the child has been restored to the family, and then later they do a second press conference and announce, you know, the identity. And sometimes that person will come forward if they're ready to discuss it. So it's always a case of great jubilation because it's been such a long search. And the remaining grandmothers, because they're getting very old, there's not so many of them left now. I think they feel that every grandchild recovered is a grandchild for all of them. So there's almost a sense of shared motherhood or shared, you know, grandmotherhood amongst them.
Can we tell another story about Estela Di Carlotto? Now, she's now president of the grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo. What happened to her daughter?
Oh, look, her daughter was a young activist, you know, her 20s, in La Plata, which is a town just near Buenos Aires. And she was arrested as a young activist and thrown into jail. And I don't think her mother knew right away that she was pregnant, but she found out through another activist who, I think you kind of, sometimes there were a few releases, and she found out that from another prisoner that she was pregnant and that she would call the child Guido after her own father if the child was found. And then she didn't have any word, and she went to the police, and she went to the military, she went to Bignone, who was one of the big generals, and pleading for the daughter to be released. And they just treated her with disdain. And then nothing happened. And then she only heard like a couple of years later in Brazil, where she'd met some other released prisoners, and a woman said, yes, she'd had this baby. And so Estela spent, you know, the next 36 years wondering where Guido was. And every time someone called Guido in the street, she'd turn around thinking, is it him? Is it him? And she was the one who announced, you know, child after child, the recovery is up to 113 of these children. And she would turned 85 and still her own grandson hadn't come forward, hadn't been found. And then just one day out of the blue, this young man showed up at the offices of the Grandmothers of the Plaza de Mayo and asked for their help in, because he'd just learned, only just learned like a couple of weeks before, that he'd been adopted. And it turned out that he'd grown up in a peasant family. There were tenant farmers on the land of a wealthy landowner. So he went to the grandmothers, they did a DNA test, and there's a special national data bank that takes care of that. And it turned out that he was Estela Di Carlotto's missing grandson.
Goodness
so
me.
It was enormous jubilation.
Well, and let me just tell listeners, Carolyn Brothers is our guest. She's written a novel called Memory Stones, but really we're talking to her about the research that I think so affected her about this long, long tail effect of a terrible time in Argentina's life. All the reunions weren't quite as nice, if I can put it, as that one. Tell us about another grandmother you met, Rosa Reusenblit, I think it is.
Yes.
And she took 15 years, she says, to build a trust with her grandson, who didn't want to give away the life he'd grown up with reason, I suppose.
This happens sometimes. I think, you know, when you've been brought up with a certain set of circumstances, you know, your identity is as you believe. You build very powerful, sometimes loving relationships with the people you believe to be your parents. And then you find out that, no, all of a sudden this is not the case. I think in Guillermo's case, they had a tip-off, an anonymous tip-off about a couple that had a child with a false birth certificate. And so they followed up like detectives. And so the daughter went to his workplace, left him a note, and, are you my missing brother? And he went to the grandmother's she's left in the address of the grandmother's. He went to find out. And yes, he was very happy to be reunited with Mariana, but then my speculation is that he hadn't taken on board everything else that went around that. And then you had Rosa, you know, claiming him as her missing grandson. And I don't think he was ready for it. Like, I think he felt a great sense of responsibility, particularly to the appropriating mother. The father, I don't think there'd been such a good relationship with him. But, you know, there's often a sense of protection for the parent that they may feel, you know.
Gosh, what divided souls they must have.
It's terrible. And it took Rosa another 15 years, I think, to win over his affection, for him to finally understand that the woman that he called his mother was not her actual daughter.
Yes, that was that question that she said. She finally said to him on the phone, hurled it at him, really, well, is your mother my daughter? This,
and then he couldn't deny that truth.
No, it's an amazing story that. Look, I have to ask you, these tip-offs that you say are still being received by the grandmothers, are people afraid still to get involved? I suppose I'm wondering about 40 years on, there's still secrecy about all this, is there?
I think the military in Argentina is a very particular beast. I think it's an extremely close-knit organization. I think that the responsibility for the disappearances and for the theft of children was spread as widely as they could do. And so that, you know, if you denounce things, then there are consequences. And in fact, the witness in a trial, I think it was in 2006, was just disappeared. You know, like, it could still happen. And it doesn't have to happen very often. But just if one key witness in a big trial disappears, then it creates terrible fear amongst other people.
Mm. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, some people are fearful, aren't they, that with a change of government that occurred earlier this year, the decision to continue the prosecutions could be overturned. I mean, the current president, Mauricio Macri, is he dedicated to this process?
This is a very interesting and sensitive question at the moment. The grandmothers have been very vocal because there seems to be the beginnings of a bit of revisionism in terms of the numbers of the disappeared, and sort of questioning, was it really 30,000? And, you know, all these numbers are estimates, and because so much has been hidden and there haven't been archives produced to document every single case, you know, there's always room for rewriting history. And I think that there's an anxiety that that perhaps his dedication to resolving this isn't as strong as that of the previous two administrations. So remains to be seen.
Well, Carolyn, thank you very much indeed for bringing us up to date, and even though it's a pretty hard old thing to read 40 years on, thank you very much.
Thank you, Geraldine.
And Carolyn Brothers is the author of The Memory Stones, published by Bloomsbury Circus. And look, there was a lot of building work going on during that interview in our Melbourne studio, so I apologise for the noise if you were wondering quite where she was. She normally lives in London or Paris, but she was back home.